What if I told you that the biggest mistake you will make buying your next home has, well, absolutely nothing to do with mortgage rates or school zones or, you know, the age of the roof? What if the factor that actually determines your happiness in a new house is entirely based on what you prefer to do at 9 a.m. on a Saturday?
It sounds completely counterintuitive, right? Especially when we're so trained to look at real estate as this pure mathematical financial transaction. But the data on buyer's remorse, it really points heavily in that direction.
Okay, let's unpack this because today we are diving into an incredibly comprehensive stack of research. We're looking at the NC Neighborhoods Guide 2026, which is authored by local real estate expert Teresa Overcash. And for those of you joining us on this deep dive today, grab your coffee, get comfortable. Our mission today is to really figure out why the traditional way we hunt for houses is entirely broken and how you can actually map your own nervous system to a specific zip code.
Right. And we should probably note that the source we're analyzing today, it isn't just from some casual observer. I mean, Teresa Overcash has over 30 years in the industry. She has more than 10,000 closings and $3 billion in sales.
Wow, 3 billion. That's wild.
Yeah, it's massive. And that level of volume, it gives someone a truly unique vantage point on human behavior. So when a professional with that kind of track record says the standard MLS search is just flat out failing buyers, well, we have to look at the methodology she uses instead.
That track record is exactly why this guide is so fascinating to me. Because usually when we talk about a massive life decision like buying a home, we crave precision, right? We want it to look like engineering.
Oh, absolutely.
We look at the listing, we count the bedrooms, we check the square footage, and we make this binary choice. It has a two-car garage or it doesn't. We just want this clean, neat spreadsheet to validate our decision.
It is deeply comforting to think that way. I mean, we all like tangible metrics. We
Yeah.
want our major investments to be neatly categorized into, a price per square foot. The problem is, you aren't just buying drywall and hardwood floors.
Right.
You are purchasing a behavioral geography. You're basically buying the environment that will actively dictate your daily habits from the moment you wake up.
Which means that neat little spreadsheet is entirely useless the second you actually move in and start living there. So I want to pose this directly to you, the listener. If you are relocating to a massive, diverse region like North Carolina tomorrow, and we're talking a footprint spanning 39 distinct neighborhoods across the Triad, Wilkes County, the Yadkin Valley, and the High Country, how would you figure out where you actually belong?
Well, the guide tackles this exact problem by essentially forcing the buyer to stop looking at houses altogether and start looking in the mirror.
I love that.
Yeah, so before you look at a single price tag or, architectural style, Teresa Overcash uses this tool called the Buyer Success System. And at its core is a free 10-question, 6-minute lifestyle match assessment.
Right, so instead of asking if you want a colonial or a ranch, it ranks your neighborhood fit across six very specific lifestyle dimensions, which are Saturday mornings, commutes, noise, space, people, and budget.
Yeah.
But I want to pause on Saturday mornings because it's a brilliant concept, but I have to challenge this a bit.
Okay, go for it.
It feels a little bit like a dating app for neighborhoods, right?
Yeah.
Like you're just swiping right on a vibe. Is it really possible to quantify something as entirely subjective as a Saturday morning preference into a mathematical geographic fit score?
What's fascinating here is exactly how this assessment translates those subjective feelings into tangible geographic coordinates. I mean, Saturday morning might sound like just a vibe, but in behavioral terms, it represents your unstructured time.
Oh, that makes sense.
Right. So the assessment asks specific questions to reveal your default state. Do you want to walk out your front door and immediately integrate into a bustling coffee shop? Or do you want to drink coffee on a back porch where you literally can't see a single neighbor?
So it's basically measuring your tolerance for friction and interaction.
Yes, exactly. And by prioritizing dimensions like noise and space over, say, the color of the kitchen cabinets, this tool acts as a psychological safeguard. Think of it as a diagnostic filter. It literally prevents you from moving into an architecturally stunning home that completely clashes with your nervous system.
Clashing with your nervous system, that is such a vivid way to put it. Because you can always rip out ugly countertops, but you cannot change the fact that your neighbor's driveway is 10 feet away when you desperately wanted isolation.
Exactly.
Or conversely, you can't fix the fact that you have to drive 30 minutes just to get a gallon of milk when you really thrive on being around people.
Yeah, the location provides the lifestyle, and the house is really just the container you sleep in. The assessment forces buyers to acknowledge that reality upfront.
Okay, Let's apply this framework then. Let's say a listener takes this 6-minute assessment and their results come back showing they value deep roots. They have a high tolerance for people, they want intense walkability, and they want to be surrounded by vibrant, tangible history. They draw energy from the crowd. Where does the data in this guide actually send them?
Well, if that is a lifestyle profile, the guide points directly away from the suburbs and straight into the historic cores of the triad. So in Winston-Salem, the prime example is Old Salem.
Okay, I read the guide, and Old Salem completely stopped me in my tracks. It says it's a 1766 settlement. Are we talking of living in a functioning historical site that literally predates the American Revolution?
We actually are, yeah. Old Salem was originally built by the Morazians, which is a Protestant denomination that established a highly organized, trades-based community back then. And because they built it with such strict grid planning and really durable materials, the infrastructure survived.
That is wild.
It is. So today, it operates as a living history museum, but it also has private residences intertwined right within it. The guide notes that homes here range from about $325,000 up to $1.2 million.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because I have to ask about the practical reality of that. Does living in a highly historic district, especially one from the 1700s, inevitably mean you are sacrificing modern convenience? I mean, are you trading reliable plumbing and insulation just to have a charming, walkable weekend?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, walkable history is arguably the most premium, highly sought-after commodity in modern urban planning. So buyers in these districts, they're highly aware of the architectural quirks. They'll tolerate the drafty windows or the strict historic preservation rules because the external environment, you know, the ability to walk to a bakery, the aesthetic beauty, the immediate sense of community, it provides a massive return on their quality of life.
Right. They aren't totally reliant on a car to feel connected to society.
Exactly.
And if someone wants that historic walkability, but maybe they don't want an 18th century Moravian settlement, does the guide offer alternative? Like, what about Greensboro?
Greensboro offers a slightly different era of history with Fisher Park. This is a 1902 era neighborhood sitting just a 10-minute walk from the downtown center. So you're trading the 1700s aesthetic for grand early 20th century architecture.
Nice. And the price is there.
The prices there run from $375,000 to $975,000. And Winston-Salem also has the West End, which features Victorian and craftsman homes from $325,000 to $850,000.
See, those price tags are pretty substantial. It usually feels like historic, walkable neighborhoods are entirely gatekept for, like, the top 1% of earners.
Okay.
But the guide highlights a neighborhood called Wattown in southeast Winston-Salem. It's a historic National Register district with Neeson Wagon Works heritage. It's walkable to Salem Lake, and the price range is $95,000 to $325,000.
Yeah.
How does a historic district even exist at that price point?
That is a really crucial insight into how microeconomies work within a single city. Wattown has blue-collar industrial roots. The Neeson Wagon Works was a massive manufacturing hub in the 19th and early 20th centuries. So the housing built around it was designed for workers, meaning smaller footprints and simpler bungalows compared to, say, the sprawling estates of Fisher Park.
Which totally proves that deep community roots and historic preservation aren't just luxury concepts. They're accessible mechanisms for community building across completely different economic realities.
Exactly. The underlying desire for walkability and history exists at every budget level. The guide effectively uses Wattown to show that if your lifestyle match requires historic charm, you don't need $1 million to achieve it. You just need to know which pocket of the region aligns with your budget.
That is so cool. Okay, let's transition to the complete opposite end of the spectrum. What if our listener takes the assessment and their nervous system requires a massive buffer zone from humanity just to recharge?
Right.
Putting them in a dense historic grid like Old Salem would be a recipe for a total breakdown. So they want a low score on noise. They want space.
Yeah.
And they want structured, predictable amenities. How does the guide solve for the buyer who essentially needs geographic insulation?
Then the search pivots completely away from the urban core. The guide introduces the luxury, lakes, and master-planned enclaves. So in Winston-Salem, the ultimate example of this is Rinalda. We are looking at luxury estates built around the historic 1917 R.J. Reynolds property, which is a 170-acre estate. It basically sits at the gateway to Wake Forest University, with prices from $350,000 all the way up to $2.5 million and beyond.
Oh, wow. So it's essentially a private forested kingdom right within the city limit.
It really is. It provides massive geographic insulation, and Greensboro has its own equivalents. There is Irving Park, which the guide labels as the city's premier luxury neighborhood with mature estate lots, also reaching up to $2.5 million. And then there is Sedgefield, which is anchored entirely by the Donald Ross Golf Course, which is the actual venue for the PGA's Wyndham Championship.
Okay, I am going to push back on these types of communities a little bit. When a neighborhood is this heavily master planned, whether it's built around a 170-acre tobacco estate or a championship golf course, doesn't the social life feel a bit, I don't know, sterile? Like stepping onto a movie set. I just struggle to see how a community culture develops organically when literally every blade of grass is governed by an HOA or a country club board.
You know, that critique is super common, but it really misunderstands the mechanism of why buyers choose these areas in the first place. It is a lot like buying a ticket to an all-inclusive resort versus going on a backpacking trip. In places like Sedgefield or Irving Park, buyers are actually paying a premium to actively outsource the friction of daily life.
Oh, I see. So they don't want organic, spontaneous growth. They want a guarantee.
Exactly the opposite of the downtown dweller. They want predictable tranquility. They are very often coming from high-stress careers, and their ideal Saturday morning requires zero mental load. The recreation, the aesthetic standards, the social circles, it is all pre-rendered for them.
And for a buyer who wants that predictability, but maybe without the $2 million price tag. The guide mentions Adams Farm in Greensboro. It has a 17-acre lake, over 20 sub-neighborhoods, and a really accessible entry point of $225,000 to $625,000. So it offers that same all-inclusive resort mechanism, just on a different scale.
Yes, it satisfies those space and noise metrics perfectly. You have a built-in community network and immediate access to nature, all while remaining insulated from the chaos of urban density.
So we have covered the urban walkers and the master planned resort lifestyles. But the region in this guide is massive. What if a listener takes the assessment and realizes they don't want a historic bungalow, and they certainly don't want a perfectly manicured golf course estate? Like, they want a lifestyle match that is completely outside the traditional suburban box.
This is where the geographic diversity of the 39 neighborhood guide really shines. It moves outward to Wilkes County and the high country, basically catering to the absolute wild cards.
The extremes.
Yeah.
Okay, let's look at Wilkes County. The guide details North Wilkesboro, where you can find a 1920s bungalow in a walkable Main Street district right on the Yadkin River for between $140,000 and $350,000. And the defining lifestyle feature, you are literally 5 minutes away from the NASCAR Speedway.
The cultural contrasts between a historic wagon works district, a PGA golf course, and a NASCAR speedway all within one regional guide is just striking. And if motorsports aren't the right fit, the guide moves just a bit further out in Wilkes County to Elkin.
Right, the Yadkin Valley wine country.
Yes. Elkin offers a completely different rhythm. You have 5 wineries within 15 minutes, a dedicated city school district, and you are 20 minutes from Merlefest, which is this massive Americana music festival. Homes there range from $175,000 to $450,000.
So what does this all mean? The fact that a single buyer's guide contains the option to sip wine at a vineyard or hear NASCAR engines from your front porch, it just shows how fragmented and specific our lifestyle choices have become. And we haven't even touched the mountains yet.
Right. The high country section represents a total shift in geography and elevation. The guide brings us to places like Valley Crucis, which is North Carolina's first rural historic district. It sits in a protected valley on the Watauga River, and it's home to the original Mass General Store. Prices there start at $395,000 and climb well past $1.8 million.
And it goes even higher. The guide features Beach Mountain Village, sitting at 5,506 feet in elevation. It is the highest incorporated town east of the Mississippi River. You have slopeside ski access. The prices there go up to $2.5 million. And in nearby Banner Elk Village, estates are reaching up to $4.5 million.
Which is an incredible premium for mountain luxury.
I have to play devil's advocate here, though. When we look at a $4.5 million estate in Banner Elk, or, you know, ski-in, ski-out homes at 5,500 feet, are these strictly secondary vacation homes for the ultra-wealthy? Or Is something else happening here? Is the modern work-from-anywhere culture actually making a ski village a viable primary lifestyle match for everyday living?
This raises an important question about how we define real estate today, because the shifting of geographic boundaries is arguably the most significant trend in the market. Historically, the ultimate filter for home buying was the commute. How long will it take me to drive to the office? That single question dictated property values and city planning for a century.
Right. Like if you worked in downtown Greensboro, you couldn't realistically live on Beach Mountain. It just didn't work.
Exactly. But now, with remote work severing that physical tie to a corporate headquarters for a massive segment of the population, the commute dimension in Teresa Overcash's lifestyle assessment might literally just be the walk from the kitchen to the home office.
Which means the traditional commuting radius is completely collapsed. And suddenly, the other dimensions, you know, the noise, the space, the people, the Saturday morning vibe, they carry all the weight in the decision-making process.
Yeah, your location is no longer dictated by your employer's zip code. It is entirely dictated by your personal lifestyle design. So if you can work from a laptop and your ideal Saturday morning involves strapping on snow skis at 5,500 feet, then Beach Mountain is no longer just a weekend getaway. It's your permanent residence.
That really explains the staggering price differences within the guide. The gap from a $140,000 bungalow near the Speedway to a $4.5 million ski estate isn't just about the structure itself. It reflects wildly different microeconomies that can now just coexist within the same broad region, all because buyers are no longer tethered to a central city hub.
The data points confirm it. Buyers are willing to pay massive premiums to secure their ideal environment, whether that means historic walkability, insulated luxury, or rural mountain access.
It is wild to think about the sheer variety contained in this 39-neighborhood guide. It really drives home the overarching mission of our conversation today. For you listening right now, whether you realize you belong in a cozy $95,000 historic bungalow in Watown, or you discover your nervous system actually demands a multi-million-dollar mountain village estate in Banner Elk, the secret to a successful move requires brutal self-awareness.
Absolutely. The greatest tool a buyer has isn't a better search filter on a real estate website. It is a thorough, honest understanding of their own daily habits.
You cannot just blindly scroll MLS listings, obsessing over square footage, and expect to find happiness. You have to define those six dimensions of living first. Saturday mornings, commutes, noise, space, people, and budget. You have to know who you are and how you actually want to live before you can find the geography that supports it.
The methodology that Teresa Overcash champions with the Buyer Success System really forces that necessary introspection. It demands that you prioritize the reality of your actual life over the superficial architectural aesthetics of a building.
Which leaves us with a really fascinating, almost philosophical thought to chew on. If our physical neighborhoods inevitably shape our daily habits, you know, if they determine whether we walk or drive, whether we hear sirens or birds, whether we chat with neighbors on a sidewalk or wave from a golf cart, then by choosing a new neighborhood based on an ideal Saturday morning, we really have to ask ourselves, are we just buying real estate or are we actually purchasing a completely new version of ourselves?
That is a profound way to look at behavioral geography. You are quite literally buying the scaffolding for the life you want to lead.
Well, on that note, we are going to wrap up this deep dive. Thank you so much for joining us for this coffee chat today. Take some time to think about your own six dimensions and figure out what your perfect lifestyle match actually looks like.
And keep in mind, the spreadsheet might be able to tell you the price, but only you can determine the true value of the environment.
Spot on. Keep asking those big questions, keep exploring, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.